Is this a novelty, or does Google hope to make these geeky, invasive things ubiquitous?
I think in Google's case, they just keep throwing stuff up against the wall to see if it's going to stick. I mean, there have been all kinds of things that they've tried that they've abandoned.
Now, we got to make one clarification. There's been some confusion because some people confuse Google Glasses with Google Goggles.
Right.
Which is different.
Right.
So Google
Never
Goggles
get your Google
is an image search.
Mixed up.
Huh?
Never get your alliterations mixed up.
Yes,
Google
you don't.
Goggles, Google Glasses.
It is a lot of G's. That's
right.
True.
What's the difference?
Well, Google Goggles is an image searching capability that Google has where you can basically have it find similar images to, you know, whatever
you're like
you
could take
to find
a picture of something with your cell phone, and then the cell phone, the software would search a database and match it up with an image to tell you what it is you're looking at.
But Google Glasses, on the other hand, is kind of a Uber navigation social cell phone smart glasses kind of thing.
I'm waiting on Google Shades, personally.
Yes. Now, that would be good.
It's a little bit out of the alliteration purview, but it's cool.
Yeah, it's got the SH thing going for it.
Yeah. What are they trying to do, and how does this play into the privacy conversation? Glasses.
If you had, you know, if you listen, I think there was a, some quotes from Sergey Brin, who is one of Google's founders, and he is complaining, get this, that there is impingement on our freedoms, not just by government privacy legislation, which is, you know, they're pursuing the Google's idea is to pursue a completely open internet, but they're also shooting at Apple and Facebook because, and in general, at the whole smartphone technology because it's keeping a lot of data off of the open internet where Google cannot index or search it. So when you look at Google's perspective on things, my guess would be is that they want everything to be searchable so they can monetize it with advertising, which is, you know, right in their sweet spot and what they've been designed to do since the get-go. When you look at that, when you contrast that perspective with some other, you know, you're going to find some conflict. But Google is doing exactly what George says. They'll take any opportunity to find a way to monetize and increase their mission.
And try it. And they certainly have the money to do it. I mean, that's the fun part for them is that they can just keep trying stuff. And if it doesn't work, no big deal.
This is Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall, along with George Costello, an independent Apple consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, the CEO of Ideology. They are collectively affectionately known as the Computer Guys. We're talking about online privacy and wondering where to draw the line on technology uses that expose personal data. Kansas City, where are your limits on how technology is involved in your daily life? Do you have privacy concerns when it comes to your data on Facebook and other social networking and web destinations? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Or you can let everybody know what you think on Facebook. So chime in on the conversation. George, Tom, where do you guys personally draw the line on usage that might expose you? And how do each of you protect your personally identifiable info, or PII, as they say in the industry?
Well, I'll go first. As Tom knows, over the years, I am much more, some people would say paranoid, other people would just say sensitive, to the whole idea of everything being out there where anyone can harvest it. But really, it almost doesn't matter anymore. You're going to do something somewhere on some website that's going to put information out there that somebody's going to find or it's going to be compromised. I mean, even if you try to keep your information off the internet to some extent, you almost can't do it anymore.
Tom?
One time I went to New Mexico and I was looking at a painting in a gallery and I remarked on my blog that I've maintained since 2001 that I like this particular painting and artist. And about 3 days later, I get an email from somebody, and he goes, "I bought that painting. and I liked it too. You have great taste. So it
did
opened.
Did that freak you out?
A little bit, because my blog gets about 85 page views a year. You know, I mean, and I've always sort of reveled in the anonymity and plain sight kind of thing. So that was interesting to find that somebody actually was paying some scant attention, even though it was to boast that they bought the painting to my blog entry.
But there are tools you can use, such as Ghostery, for instance. What is Ghostery all about?
Well, Ghostery is a really, I think it's a little app that everybody ought to have just for informational purposes. But what it does is it just looks at the code on every web page that you load and then puts a little list of all the different bots and different legal advertising and other analytics tools that are running on that page. So you can actually see all the different advertising media syndicates that that particular page is using to, you know, help them either A, figure out who's doing what on their website, or to try to sell something. So it gives you an insight into what else is going on the page that you might not normally think of.
Is it cross-platform?
Yeah, sure. It just you can put it on all sorts of different browsers.
We're talking about privacy in the information age with George Costello and Thomas O'Brien, the Computer Guys. Kansas City, what are your limits for how technology is involved in your daily life? Do you have privacy concerns when it comes to your personal data? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. What are your thoughts on privacy in the information age or the lack thereof? You can also shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Leslie in Leawood, welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning, Jabalani. This is so interesting. I work with a national, in a national context with an alumni body, and we find that a lot of the alums are making specific groups on Facebook. So, you know, it might be the international alums or the MBA alums or, you know, whatever. And so they connect this way, which is fantastic, and Facebook has enlivened their conversation in ways that just an alumni organization couldn't possibly have hoped to do before. But they're also sending, using the private message tool, so not necessarily the public postings on Facebook, but messages that go back and forth, and some of it may even contain sort of some of their fundraising stuff on there, or, you know, other financial information, not deeply serious state secret stuff, but just, you know, things maybe you wouldn't normally have out there. And my question is how concerned should one be about that? And is there anything you'd want to do that? Does Facebook keep those private messages? Could they be mined for anything at some point? Blah, blah, blah.
Leslie brings up a good point. In addition to ear hustling, shoulder surfing, and things of that nature, you know, physical security risks, there are also risks of data being mined on Facebook or somebody eavesdropping in a private network conversation. Tell us about that, George.
All I know is that it depends on the person that's, you know, through whom the data is flowing. One of the ways you could, I suppose, uncover some clues would be to read the ever-popular end-user license agreement, or EULA, as it's called, which usually goes on for pages and pages of legalese, but they usually will disclose somewhere in that agreement what they do and don't do with your data.
That is compelling beach reading, by the way.
Oh, it's awful.
Very, very compelling prose.
You know, on my end of things on that, I think that you always have to be a little bit – you need to be aware of what you're posting anywhere on any kind of platform. I don't care what it is, Facebook or not. Most of the big ones, Facebook is a good example, try to take really good care, and they try to be much more transparent about what they do with your data. So finding that out will be pretty easy. Whether or not you should have a concern about it is, you know, kind of another question, because it's no more secure or insecure probably than email is. You know, with so email we think of as a person-to-person kind of thing, but you know how many times you've seen emails copied to hundreds of people by mistake or on purpose. The other thing about Facebook, and we wanted to mention this anyway, is that you can now download all of your Facebook information, and if you just go to the settings area, there's a place where it says download your information. And depending on how many friends you have, it may take a long time, but it gives you your half of everything that you've posted, videos, pictures, your wall postings and all sorts of things like that. It won't give you other people's postings. So you could find out a little bit. You know, it includes your direct messages.
But there's a caveat here, Tom. Yeah. What happened when you tried to do that? You get a little bit of a digital runaround, so to speak.
Well, yeah, I haven't actually been successful in doing that just yet. But, you know, it depends on the size of your Facebook archive, which can be quite huge if you have a lot of friends. Fortunately, I don't have a lot, unfortunately, whichever, I don't have a lot of Facebook friends. So it took about a day. I got an email from them, and then I made the mistake of waiting a couple days before I clicked the link, and it had expired. So I had to redo
start
it.
Start over.
And that's what I'm waiting on. So if you decide to download your information, when they give you the email saying it's ready,
do it now.
Click the link and get your data now. Then they also say, be careful what you do with it. And that's another good point.
What do you mean by be careful what you do with it?
Well, if you took all your Facebook data and then posted it on your blog, then it would still be out there with less protection than Facebook would give it. On the other hand, if you put it in a hard drive that you want to save for, you know, your great-great-grandchildren, just make sure that that doesn't get stolen when somebody breaks into your house.
And then a coffee table book would also kind of be...
You could print it out.
The same.
That's another idea.
Print it out. A little old school.
I like that.
Reed in Overland Park. We're talking about internet privacy, information age privacy, or the lack thereof. Welcome to Central Standard, Reed.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I had a quick question. As a younger generation, I see a lot of people, older generation and even my age group, who don't know what they're sending or giving up in terms of personal information. What kind of responsibilities do programs and website providers have to keep that information secure and not sell it?
Well,
that's a good question.
In a perfect world, you know, they would respect your privacy, but unfortunately, there are plenty of scam artists out there, so it's, you know, it's hard to say.
I think there is a requirement to state your privacy practices when you collect information from people and tell them what you're doing, whether you're using it just in aggregate or whether you're taking personal information and selling it to third parties or maybe just allowing third parties to use it, allowing third parties to look at it in aggregate. There are all sorts of ways to slice and dice that.
And to say it in legalese to make it look like it's inoffensive.
Well, the undercurrent to what Reed's talking about, is there any existing legal framework or legal recourse or indemnification for this type of privacy dispersal?
I think we need our lawyer guy back here to answer that question.
Yeah, where is he when we need him?
Right.
There is and there isn't. You know, the thing is that there are privacy laws. There was a Privacy Act, a major one in 1974 that's been amended, expanded, and so forth. And then there have been additional acts that protect your privacy in particular areas. So there's a Financial Privacy Act. So anybody that has access to your financial records, banking, investments, or whatever, they have to disclose. Credit card companies have to send you privacy disclosures. Obviously, healthcare, those kinds of things. You go into the doctor these days, you have to sign off a little thing even to let them leave a message on your voicemail. So there is a quilt of different kinds of privacy laws, but there's also a lot of moth holes in that quilt where the government has exempted various, usually government agencies, from having to observe those laws. And it's almost always for terrorism and national security, law enforcement, and other reasons.
So it's safe to say that with these quilts and these moth holes, these privacy cuts to the fabric of our society.
Oh, please.
We're going to go to Richard.
Grown. He's got it covered
in KC Mo.
Hey, guys, I had an idea that a little different analogy, the one you gave earlier about listening in on a party line, if that, you know, as far as a comparison to today's privacy online and somebody possibly watching you. I think it'd be more analogous to if when the telephone first came out, if the phone company would have automatically recorded everybody's conversations and then could sell those with, you know, without your permission. I mean, they wouldn't necessarily identify who you were personally, but to me that's analogous to what's going on now. And I, you know, as far as whether people would have accepted that as a price for using a telephone when they first came out.
Kind of like in America's Funniest Phone Calls back in 1910 or something.
Yeah, I mean, if the technology would have been there to automatically record you as you spoke, maybe if they didn't identify it, but that they could, you know, turn around and sell that without compensating you. For me personally, I'm not on Facebook, and I mean, I kind of communicate the old-fashioned way, either face-to-face or over the phone, and I don't use Google that much because I just don't like, I don't like the concept of being tracked in my personal information, even if it's impersonal. It doesn't say my name on it, but my personal information being used for somebody else to make a whole bunch of money and I don't get anything off of it. You know, that's kind of my limit, I guess. It's just kind of the principle of the thing more as much as it is the privacy of the thing. And also, if Google and other agencies track people's information, they say they won't use it personally, but if they have that information, that's never really been our criteria for privacy, is saying somebody, well, I have your information, but I won't use it.
So, Richard, let me get this straight. If someone were willing to pay for your information, would you give them your information?
I probably still would not, but I think people should. If somebody is monetizing your information, shouldn't you have it? I mean, shouldn't you be compensated for it? We do that in other walks of life. I just think that Google, a lot of people look at it from their end of the wire as saying, oh, this is so convenient for me, and I look at all this information I have access to, and to me it's just another way of, another gimmick, another way of basically accomplishing the same end result. I can sit at my computer and look online or look in a book or call somebody or whatever to find out what I need to know, but on this end of the wire, it looks like convenience. On the other end of the wire, it's simply about monetizing information, just like the streetscape you were talking about earlier. The reason they collected all that is one way or another, they're going to find a way to make money off of it. And that's fine. That's capitalism. That's free enterprise. But we used to have more regulation about communication than we do now for the new technology, because the phone company, because the FCC, they could not record your conversation and they couldn't sell it, because of FCC communications rules. And we don't have those rules now for all the new technology, so it's kind of open season, and they can, you know, I wouldn't sell mine. Some people might sell theirs, but I think you should have that option.
Thank you, Richard, for your contribution to the conversation on privacy in the information age. Tom, you had some thoughts.
Well, I was just hoping that we keep that conversation just between Richard and us. Nobody's listening in,
right?
Accidentally recording it. No, he makes a good point. And the point, though, is that a lot of these laws do exist. It really hasn't changed necessarily because of the technology. It's just that the advance of technology has caused Congress and states to go back and take another look at these laws and expand them to fit the new technologies. Now, that's good in some ways, but also I think there are definite issues with it. On terms of selling the information, the one thing about that is that if you find out that somebody is selling your conversation with somebody or whatever it might be, probably the first thing most people would do would be to try to get a piece of the action. And, you know, the commerce involved, and I'm not really being cynical on that, the deterrent there is that I might say, well, I need to be compensated for the profit that you made. So I'm going to go to court. I'm going to sue that entity, and we'll take it down the line and see where it goes.
And the wild card in all of this is if you put information that is sensitive into the hands of others, no matter what your legal agreements might be or whatever, if their system is compromised by a hacker and your data is stolen, you know, then it's anybody's guess how it's going to turn out.
That's certainly the red herring of that conversation. Even if your data were secure,
right,
a third-party hacker or someone,
right,
unbeknownst to you could
steal
hack that third-party person, then it becomes 6 degrees of,
yeah,
degradation,
right,
so to speak. Reed in Lawrence, welcome to Central Standard.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. I just had two things that I wanted to add. One, I just kind of want to talk about the growing pains that come with new technologies like this. You know, social networking, while it's been around for quite some time, it's only really become, you know, a key part of society for just the past, you know, couple of years. And I think there's sort of a sense of growing pains that, you know, people kind of have to learn. It takes a while for, you know, society as a whole to kind of learn the dangers of sharing your information, but also, you know, to kind of get a sense of, you know, how much they want to sacrifice. And it kind of ties into my second point, which is, you know, it's about kind of striking a balance. You know, yeah, there's a risk when you're, you know, divulging your information out. But I also think there's a huge reward. You know, there are a lot of wonderful services out there Like I know Google has their Google Documents that I use daily in order to share, to collaborate with my friends and fellow students. But all of that requires, you know, signing up for a Google account and, you know, signing away a little bit of your privacy. So I think it's, you know, big thing is just trying to find the balance and not being too scared to take advantage of the wonderful opportunities that are out there.
Thank you, Reed. We're chatting about the pros and cons of privacy or the lack thereof in the information age. George Costello, an independent Apple consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, CEO of Ideology, are our guest, affectionately known as the Computer Guys. Privacy is the order of the day here. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we ask, is the age of privacy actually over? And we talk about the National Security Agency and the Transportation Security Administration's plans to get all up in your business. Kansas City, where are your limits on how technology is involved in your daily life? Do you have privacy concerns when it comes to your data that's out in cyberspace? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. If you're on Facebook right now and you're concerned about your personal privacy, you should know that Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg has said publicly that the age of privacy is over. Just thought you should know that. So joining us once again are Central Standard's IT department, the Computer Guys. They're here. George Costello, an independent Apple consultant. Thomas O'Brien, the CEO of Ideology and enterprise IT consultant. Privacy or the lack thereof in the technology age is what we're talking about on today's program. Kansas City, where do you draw the line when it comes to your online or virtual privacy? What wouldn't you share online? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. As we were talking about before break, George, there are some things that you cannot control in the privacy space, and the government intervention is one of them. Something Orwellian might be going on in Utah, George. What is the Utah Data Center?
Well, the NSA is building what amounts to just a giant electronic library, basically, out in this little godforsaken town called Bluffdale in Utah. And I would encourage people, if you're interested in this subject, to go to wired.com, do a search for NSA data center, and read the article, because I remember my impression after I first read this rather extensive expose, I guess you would call it, of what's going on out there, because it is so comprehensive. It just boggles the mind as to what they're doing in terms of they're going to be able to store everything, every credit card receipt, every email, every cell phone conversation, everything that anybody does that leaves a track. They're going to have the ability to store it and search it.
Did it cause you to draw your shutters and tell your next of kin you love them?
No, but you know, it's. We first started talking about this subject years ago on this show when Walt was, you know, doing the show, and it started out almost innocently in a sense. I mean, the FBI was involved in it at the time, and there was, in one case, they were interested in tracking down a criminal, a mobster-type person, and they were able to get a court order that allowed them to go to OnStar and turn on the microphone that was in this guy's car, and
surreptitiously.
Yeah, that's it. Listen in on their private conversations without them being aware of it. There was another case where the FBI took an electronic box, if you want to call it that, and took it to an ISP. They were ostensibly targeting one individual. But the interesting thing about it was that this device sifted every conversation that was flowing through that ISP's facilities. Well, those were that was a cakewalk compared to what they're doing now, which is the ability to search everything.
And this is a little bit more alarming because it's not the FBI, it's the National Security Agency.
Well, yeah, then you've got, you know, what are there? There's like 14 national intelligence agencies of the government, and not all of them talk to each other, as we discovered in the wake of 9/11, where the TSA knew stuff that was going on but couldn't tell the FBI because at the time they were restricted to not getting involved in domestic stuff. And, of course, now that's completely flip-flopped. So it's crazy.
The National Security Agency, affectionately known as the NSA, is chartered to look at foreign intelligence. They're a cryptographic organization. You know, they look at codes and that sort of thing. That's what a lot of people know. They know that by law NSA is supposed to look outside of the country. They know that CIA is supposed to operate outside of the U.S. FBI operates inside the U.S. and other law enforcement. The thing is that during the Bush administration, the NSA also got the portfolio of looking after information security among U.S. government systems. So now they have this dual role going for them. So purportedly, and I think this is the concern that people have, is that, well, if I'm talking to somebody in Europe, the NSA can legally look at that side of the conversation or vice versa. But what happens, do we know for a fact that they're actually analyzing information that they're getting that's purely domestic? That's where you get all sorts of conspiracy theories and heebie-jeebies, I think, is maybe a good word. That kind of thing that goes down your spine when you think that something really wrong is happening.
Speaking of heebie-jeebies and agencies connecting or not connecting, yeah. The TSA also has something in the offing in terms of surveillance as well, the sort of mobile airline security line.
Well, you know, the TSA first started doing like face scans at the Super Bowl two, 3 years ago. And now, of course, they scan you at airports, and they've got these full body scanners that people got all excited about because they thought that, you know, they were seeing you naked through your clothes. But if you've ever seen actual images that thing takes, they're pretty blurry and not very specific. Nevertheless, they have been able to take the basic technology, maybe miniaturize it, maybe change it. Now they're proposing that they should install this type of body scanning capability at entrances to things like stadiums or any, you know, large airports, any large public place where you just walk in through a tunnel or a door and everybody gets scanned. Also, they've got a device they can put on a van and drive down the street and scan people that are just walking around on sidewalks. So, I mean, you know, as you said earlier, what's the limit?
Wait a minute. That guy right there.
Yeah.
No, that guy right there. Ooh.
Oh,
that girl right there.
How about that? Yeah, right. Exactly.
We're talking about privacy or the lack thereof in the information age. Paul in KC, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, hi, this is Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Yeah, I was telling your screener that as far as social networking goes, I just say no. I mean, what you were just talking about, lack of privacy, Zuckerberg with the age of privacy is over. I mean, how many times has Facebook been in the news for changing their privacy policies and the way the pages are displayed? How many times have you heard about, you know, kids having everything from fights to murders over Facebook issues? How many times have you heard about, well, okay, I put a picture on Facebook, it's got my metadata there, which tells a GPS location. Yeah, I'm going out of town to get robbed. I don't need to have everybody knowing my business. How about employers asking for your Facebook password or looking over your shoulder, shoulder surfing your Facebook account? It just, you know, it's too much. It's I quite frankly think it's a pet rock of this generation, and it's going to go away eventually because people will realize that they don't need this. And when you're talking about OnStar, well, I've got an old vehicle, an '87 pickup that I drive, and it makes me want to keep it even longer. I don't need, you know. And you're talking about facial recognition, that the TV show Person of Interest on ABC, or I think it's ABC. Well, anyway, the Person of Interest show, it's basically using that as a theme. You know, the government is scanning everywhere, and maybe it's becoming reality. But it's just, you know, it's one of those things where I think it's just not useful to me in my life. I have enough to do. I keep in contact with people in my old-fashioned way. I guess it's my Luddite limit, my limit of technology that I don't want to deal with anymore. You know, I don't want to go past this point.
Thank you, Paul, for your
comments. I like that term, the Luddite limit.
Paul is in the 80s strong. He has a Nancy Reagan just say no approach social media, and he calls social media a pet rock. So listen, he's in the 80s strong.
Nothing wrong with that.
Really. Is that drastic? Saying no to social media, just abstaining.
I think it depends on your age group.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think that it's not that pervasive. We think it is, but maybe over half of the population has some social networking account, but there's still a considerable portion that does not.
On the other hand, it would vary by age group. If you were under 25, it's probably predominant.
You know, it's not just government, and it's not just Facebook that you have to worry about.
Right.
Employers are increasingly monitoring and analyzing what's going on with their employees.
True.
And for good reason. They think that there's, you know, something fishy going on, or that they're doing excessive personal, you know, behaviors while at work, or that they're going to websites they shouldn't. And so, you know, your employer is right up there with everybody else in looking at what you do online, as long as they're doing it while you're at work.
Is the age of privacy over?
Oh, yeah.
That was a
gone.
That was a very simple question.
Actually, he was late in saying that. I think it was over years ago.
Joseph in Lawrence, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello. I had a comment on the earlier caller who was talking about being willing to sell his personal information if he got a cut on it.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of companies out there that already think you're getting value for it. I've worked in the industry, and years ago, they had calculated a value for every registration that they had in their database, and they considered that part of your payment for having purchased the product, that they were selling the product at a lower value than they would otherwise if they didn't get that information.
Yeah, that's one approach. And, of course, the other one is that to be able to use these services for free, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
You know, the trade-off,
right.
I think that's what Reed was mentioning earlier, is that you give up some of that information for let them use it the way they wish.
Well, the age of privacy is over. That's been established here today on Central Standard. It was over a long time ago, and
right.
It's been established today. This is Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall, along with George Costello, an independent Apple consultant, and Tom O'Brien, a CEO of Ideology and IT Consultant. They are affectionately and collectively known as the Computer Guys. Are you guys ready to go rapid fire?
Sure.
All right, let's go.
It's time now for a technology news lightning round with Thomas O'Brien and George Costello.
Severe weather and IT discourse here on Central Standard with the lightning round. Baseball season has just started, but the World Series is already in the news. That is, Google and Oracle are in what's being called the World Series of Intellectual Property Trials. What's going on with Google and Oracle?
We talked about that not long ago. There were a number of patents involved. The court threw out almost all of them as not being germane to the trial, but the jury selection starts today or tomorrow, I think. And I think the monetary limit on this is now in the neighborhood of about $30 million one way or the other. But the issue, of course, is that Google was infringing on patents held by Oracle that it had acquired when it acquired Sun Microsystems, and that they continue to do that, and they want them to pay. And pay handsomely, more handsomely than Google wants to pay. And they want them to, you know, they've been threatening to get them to cease and desist, which, you know, now it's all going to trial and we'll find out what's going on. This, you know, we've talked a lot about the issue of
the patent wars. Yeah.
And, you know, this particular one may or may not solve, it won't solve the whole thing. But it will be interesting to see what a jury actually thinks about it as opposed to just a judge or some administrative body.
That's assuming that the jury can understand it.
George, a flashback Trojan virus exploits a Java vulnerability. Turn off Java in Safari or install update?
Yeah. This has been in the news recently about mainly because I guess it's the first piece of software that's found its way. And it's like a bot. And the word was that they were able to definitively figure out. In fact, this morning I was reading a piece that said it got up to 670,000 Macs that were infected with this. there is a way to deal with it. It does get in through a vulnerability in Java. You can deal with it in a number of ways. One would be to, if you use Safari on the Mac, go into Preferences and turn off Java. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily turning off JavaScript, but you can turn off Java specifically in Safari. In older versions of Firefox, you can't do that. I haven't looked at the latest version of Firefox on that, but that's one defense. You can also get a tool, a software tool. I don't know if Andrea has posted it on the KCUR website.
It will be on the KCUR.org website later. Full details on how you can...
Yeah, you just download it and run it. All that it's very quick. Everybody's got a copy of the script editor in OS X. You just double-click on the file, hit the Run button in the script editor, and it will tell you instantly whether or not you are infected. And there's also a removal tool that's available that you can run to get rid of it. And it's important that you check, and if you are infected, that you get rid of it, because these bots have the ability to download additional software which can change their mission. So you definitely want to check to see whether or not it's on your machine.
George, what about running software update on your Mac?
Well, if you run software update, Apple has issued a patched version of Java, but only for 10.6 and 10.7. So if you're running an older version of the OS like 10.5 or 10.4, there is no fix from Apple. That's what they do.
Again, more of those details on the flashback Trojan virus exploiting a Java vulnerability on KCUR.org later today. AT&T now allowing off-contract customers to unlock iPhones for use with other telecom carriers. What's the implications of this?
Well, you've got to be in good standing. You can't owe them any money. You can't be on a contract, and all of those kinds of things. And there really aren't that many places you could take an unlocked phone. You can go to T-Mobile and you can go overseas with it. But it's just it's actually a cheaper way, if you've been an AT&T customer all along, than buying an unlocked phone from Apple. Apple will sell you an unlocked phone, but it's about $600. So if you need that capability and you're an AT&T customer, that's one way you can get it.
The Microsoft Store is opening. Store number 20.
We're excited. We're excited.
Oak Park Mall. We care?
We're going to storm that store.
We're going to stay up all night. We're going to get in line in advance,
What's Microsoft's strategy here with a retail store?
Well, now, wait a minute. Sony has Sony-style stores. Apple has Apple stores. Microsoft, why not?
Yeah. Although
they have a store,
they're late to the party, just like they've. All they do is copy everybody else.
What do you get at Microsoft stores that you can't get online or through an independent reseller?
It'll be interesting to see because.
You probably get the Microsoft feeling.
Really?
You'll have a lot of people walking around with all dressed in white with little Microsoft badges on, and you'll get to feel kind of one with the Microsoft.
Maybe polo shirts.
You think they'll have Microsoft geniuses?
They may. The Microsoft dunce bar. They can have that.
Okay.
We're making fun, but it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting.
It's opening up in Oak Park Mall, so Microsoft.
Later this year.
Yeah, Microsoft enthusiasts will be out there for that. Refreshed iMacs and MacBooks due around the end of June with anti-glare glass. Thinner design. What does this mean?
I don't know. It means that the regular laptops will look a lot more like the MacBook Air series. They'll be thinner and lighter. They probably will lack a DVD drive. That seems to be Apple's latest major hardware change. And all they're doing is keeping up with the latest generation of Intel processors, which were just released, I think, either a week or so ago, or they're due out any time now. So they're just updating the laptop line.
Speaking of this sleekness, a smaller 7-inch iPad is under consideration by Apple as well, and they're also expanding in Europe.
Well, that's the rumor. I mean, we don't know what they're going to do. Apple says that they experiment with many things all the time, and some of it never sees the light of day. But, if I was Apple, given the commanding kind of position that they have in the tablet market, if they could produce a 7-inch tablet that was competitive, I think I'd bring it out. I mean, just as a way of covering every possible base in that market.
Tom, Facebook says it's backing a new cybersecurity bill due before the U.S. Congress later this month. House of Representatives Bill 3523 would enable the government to access web users' private data on suspicion of a cyber threat. What do you make of Facebook's willingness to help the government in this particular instance, the CIFA?
This is the acronym is CISPA, C-I-S-P-A. Right. This is the converse of the SOPA one that we were talking about not, I don't know, 2 months ago or so. You know, the previous incarnation of the privacy law was very onerous because it required Google and Facebook and all these big, internet players to actually take positive action to go after the targets. Now, in this case, it's a little less onerous on them, and that's why I think Facebook is figuring, okay, well, we can deal with this. It's a little less costly to us, so why don't we go with it and maybe get it stopped right here before we do something even more extreme.
Does this set a dangerous precedent? Like, what do you think of the government's ability to seize private servers, as we saw in the mega upload case? What are the dangers here?
They're still trying to figure out what to do with all the legal data in the mega upload case. And that's, you know, law enforcement can seize stuff and has been able to for a long time. So, you know, the problem is that these, because of the cloud, the data is not on a single box. So you can't just go get that machine right there and get what you need. It's distributed across hundreds or thousands of machines. And so how are you going to get a search warrant to cover all of that and not stop everything in its tracks?
And many people are concerned about the government's ability to write, access, or change or delete data as well to build a case. Is there any credence to that?
No.
No? Not at all?
Nah.
Not at all. Do you think
not
it's
this month.
Do you think it's fair of a company to ask an employee to surrender their Facebook password? That's been in the news lately. Companies asking employees to surrender their Facebook passwords.
George, can I have your Facebook password, please?
Sure, you absolutely can.
I'll give you a job.
Okay.
Okay.
Done.
No problem. You know, that's just crazy. And, you know, Maryland has actually got a bill that's passed both houses of their legislature. It's sitting waiting for the governor to sign it. The governor's saying, well, I've got hundreds of bills to sign, so we'll get to it in due time. And it would be the first state to actually ban that practice from occurring.
Why is this even happening?
Well, it's because an employer can't look at your Facebook account if you're not their friend, unless you've got it turned wide open. So it goes back to our privacy conversation. If you have good protection on your Facebook account and your employer is not your friend, then the only way they can see what's on it is to ask you for the password.
While we're on the subject of Facebook, this is a little late but still pertinent to the conversation. Facebook's acquisition of Instagram for 1 billion smackaroos. What are your thoughts on this? Are we in the age or back in the age of irrational exuberance in technology, M&A activity, or does this actually make sense to you guys?
My understanding was that this was a strategic move on their part, where they were trying to stop somebody else from acquiring this company.
Strategic is billions. Tactical is just millions.
Millions, okay.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. No, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah. A total waste of money on Facebook's part. It was crazy. I don't know why they did it. And I'm sure some people will disagree with me. But, you know, they could have easily just created their own Instagram. So what's the point? I think they were worried. I think they're in the process of doing what Microsoft and Apple and all these others have done all along, which is stamp out competition wherever they see it to protect their franchise.
That's a lightning round. And again, on our website, we have a zipped archive folder for those concerned about the flashback Trojan virus on Apple and on Safari. The folder contains a removal tool for the Mac virus and a tool to check for its presence on your operating system. Just click on Central Standard article on KCUR.org titled, What Privacy? And what privacy is that what we've been talking about today with our guest, the computer guys, George Costello, an independent Apple consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, CEO of Ideology, an IT enterprise consultant, affectionately, collectively, together,
as a duo,
known as the computer guys. Thank you very much for joining us on today's program.
Okay. See ya.
And tune in tomorrow as we send in a clown. We learn the latest trends in clowning and also how clowns can avoid making children cry. cry. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi with help from Charlie Upchurch. Up to Date is next with a look at the university security preparedness atmosphere on the 5-year anniversary of the Virginia Tech shooting. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.